Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. This is the big conversation. It's the great debate, but only if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. You can call me now on 44208601455. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line, and remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero, or no one will understand either of us. You can also SMS the show on 44780008066, or you can email me at comment@presstv.co.uk. Well, millions are on the streets of Egypt again this week, and particularly probably tomorrow after the Juma prayers. The future of the Egyptian revolution hangs in the balance, precariously poised between the Muslim Brotherhood and their Salafist allies, who form the governing alliance, and the coalition of other revolutionary forces, including Arab nationalist and left-wing socialist forces, and liberals and the former remnants of the Mubarak regime. This clash between these two forces looked, when I was in the Middle East just yesterday, as if it might lead to civil war. The Egyptian army has stepped in, has attempted to separate the sides. Protests outside the presidential palace are now banned. We had the unedifying sight of Egypt's president scuttling out of a side door and going to sleep in his old home rather than stay in the presidential palace. So great were the crowds that were besieging it. Where should we stand on this? Well, I have my own views. They're not the views of Press TV. They're not the views of any government or party. And moreover, if you have different views, I want to hear from you. Let's have this argument out in the open. Israel, or what they call Israel, spat in the face of the foreign governments that had backed them with so much money and so many weapons and so much political and diplomatic power over many, many decades. When it announced, as a response to a decision reached democratically by the overwhelming majority of the members of the United Nations to admit to observer non-member status a state called Palestine, Israel's retaliation was swift. First of all, they stole nearly £200 million worth of the Palestinian Authority's money, confiscated it, just like that, and then announced a new settlement program that kills forever any idea that the two-state solution, as they call it — for me, it isn't a solution at all, but for them, they call it a two-state solution — well, it's completely impossible in the circumstances that this new settlement will create. European governments summoned their Israeli ambassadors for a dressing down, or at least that's what they wanted us to believe. Even the United States government condemned, or criticized, I think was the word they used, this insult to the whole world from the illegal settler state that they call Israel. And the economic winter, which has settled in on the United Kingdom's economy. It's just as cold as the actual climate outside. Snow is blowing outside, and ice has set in on the UK economy. The deficit is growing. Despite all the austerity, the government owes more money 2.5 years in to its savage austerity program than it did before it started. And it's going to continue until 2018. Well, these are the subjects this evening. As I say, the views I express are mine alone. I want to hear yours, especially Barry from Norway, who wants to talk about two of those subjects. Barry, welcome to the show. What would you like to say?
Good evening, Mr. Galloway.
Good evening, sir.
It's good to have you always. Good to have you.
Thank you.
First of all, I just have to send my My condolence, you know, to the great people who just died for their country, Palestinian. And then finally, you know, at least we have a state that has an independence. It's a big joy, I think, for the whole world. And it's a shame to those who are supporting, you know, how to call it, the Israelis, you know, who have been putting the Palestinians into suffering for years.
Yes.
Concerning about Palestinian now, and I think what the both Fatah and the other party, if you could help me, what is the name of the other
Hamas.
Party again?
Hamas.
Hamas. I would really rather see to them these two parties to come together as one. Let them build that great nation, and let them forget all about, you know, hating each other, fighting each other. Now it's time for them to come together, sit into one table, make sure that Palestina become the real Palestinian. And when it comes to the settlements, you know, really, look, the world is watching. Israel thought that they will just keep on going on, you know, occupying these lands, you know, without, you know, how to call it, Palestine. They'll be taking the whole of Palestine, you know, to be there, to be one Israel. That will never be possible.
No.
At least finally, you know, just a few days ago, Palestine becomes, you know, how to call it, you know, become their own, you know, their own independent state. Nobody thought that, you know, 2012, Palestine will become, you know, an independent state.
Well, of course, you know, Barry, it isn't yet an independent state. It's one thing to call yourself an independent state. It's another thing to be one. And even the non-member state observer status, which the UN has just awarded, whilst no doubt in some respects a step forward, in some other respects a step backward, no doubt the distant prospect of a Palestinian state remains distant. And the question is, what kind of Palestinian state should those of us who love Palestine struggle for? I believe that the demography, the topography, and the political situation that exists now in the world means that this two-state solution is simply impossible. The area they call the West Bank is completely blanketed with Israeli illegal settlements. There's an apartheid wall. There are thousands of military checkpoints. It's simply going to be impossible for a meaningful Palestinian state on just 21 or 22% of what was historically all of Palestine to emerge. That's why I say we should fight for the right of return of all the Palestinians to their land and a democratic state for all the Jews, Muslims, and Christians with entitlement to be there. It's good enough for every other country in the world. At least that's what we struggle for around the world. I'm not sure why it's not good enough for Israel, Palestine. Charles is in Malta. He wants to talk about Israeli settlements. Charles, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mr. Galloway. Good evening.
Nice to hear from you again. Go ahead, sir.
First of all, thanks for letting me on your show, and
welcome.
Well done for Press TV for being most probably the only international news channel to be a voice for the common people like myself.
Thank you.
So, I remember back in the early 90s, I was still a 10-year-old boy, American President Bill Clinton had went to Gaza, I'm sure you remember more than me,
yeah.
Gave the government of Gaza money for infrastructure, hotels, and even built an airport. The Jews, however, in America came up with Monica Lewinsky, and we all know it was a fake and what happened.
I don't think it was the Jews that came up with Monica Lewinsky. I think it was Mr. Clinton. It was Mr. Clinton's wickedness that brought about the situation with Monica Lewinsky, no?
The thing is this, that after years passed, Monica Lewinsky was a fake, and it was a sort of makeup story. And the other thing is this, when Arafat was on the brink of making peace with Israel for the two-state solution, we all know what happened. He mysteriously died. Anyway, we cannot forget that Jews were brought into Palestine by the British in the 1940s and took over their land. Hence, Hamas was born as a government in Gaza who are fighting for what was once theirs. I'm in Malta today, and I think that I would become a Hamas too if some foreigner came over and took over my island, just like the Jews took over Palestine. So does that make me a terrorist? Moreover, big Western countries simply need to take action really fast now, as Israel has no respect for humanity. That is why they want to cut off the Palestinians in the West Bank from Jerusalem and make it more complicated for the two-state solution, or maybe impossible, with Jerusalem being the capital of Palestine, importantly to know, as it once was. Thank you so much, Mr. Galloway.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you. Let me just correct one or two points. There have always been Jews in Palestine, and there's no problem at all about there being Jews in Palestine. The question is whether a Zionist settler state, which began not in the 1940s, but with the Balfour Declaration of the British Foreign Secretary almost 100 years ago, Arthur Balfour promised to the Zionist movement, which then represented only a tiny segment of international Jewry, he promised them the land which belonged to someone else, namely the Palestinians. And that's where this tragedy began. And whereas once Jews and Christians and Muslims lived absolutely harmoniously side by side in historic Palestine, with the evident intention of the Zionist movement to take over the land entirely, to kick out the non-Jewish inhabitants entirely, and if they could have driven every single Palestinian out of Palestine, they would have. As it was, they drove out 800,000, who have now become 13 million, mostly living outside the border of Palestine, either if they're unlucky in rancid refugee camps alongside, or in exile in Malta, in England, in the United States, and scattered around the world. But thanks, Charles. An interesting call from an interesting place, Malta. Very good to hear from you. Let's hear from Paul Nicholson in London. He's the chair of Zacchaeus Charity for the Very Poor Who Are in Debt. Because one of the things we're talking about this evening is this economic blizzard this winter, which has settled in over the British economy, indeed over the Eurozone as well. Paul, welcome to the show.
It's nice to be with you.
Now, tell me this. You must be noticing a huge increase in the number of people suffering through indebtedness in this economic climate.
And that was before the budget. Perhaps one of the most dramatic and difficult things for impoverished families to deal with has been the housing benefit cap.
Yes.
Because that means if you're on a benefit which is there to pay for your food, your clothes, your transport, and your fuel, and you have another benefit, which is for housing, and they cut that one down, you have to use the money which is available or meant to be available for food, clothes, fuel, and transport to pay the rent. And that means that we've had an explosion of food banks in this country.
Yes.
Which is a sure sign that we have a major crisis growing up among our very poorest citizens.
Reverend Paul, I was going to mention this food bank thing and also something else that was in the news today.
Yes.
1 in 16 of people surveyed in the Greater London area and the Travel to Work London area are now sleeping in their cars some night in London to avoid the commute back and then back into London, because they simply don't have the money to go back home and then come back into London for work the next day. This is working people sleeping in their cars. And I just thought to myself that food banks, people sleeping in their cars, are two phenomena that I never thought we'd see in Britain. What do you say?
It worries me enormously, because we are the fourth largest economy in the world. And I really wonder sometimes whether a very right-wing government hasn't taken the advantage of the recession and the large debts that the country has to impose a very right-wing solution on the whole area of poverty. The argument comes from the government, and there is a modicum of truth in it, that there has been a very slack benefit system, which has meant that people have stayed on benefits rather than go to work. Now, that has been exaggerated enormously, because we have 2.5 million people unemployed in this country, and I'm absolutely certain, because I've been working with these people for over 30 years, that the vast majority of them would much, much rather be in work. And indeed, as you rightly pointed out, a very large number of the people who are suffering at the moment are already in work.
Yes, the working poor, yeah.
And, of course, their rent has been capped as well.
Yes. Reverend, let me ask you one last point because it's been on my mind. And you're a charity that's specializing in poor people who are in debt.
I saw
an advertisement on the television the other day, and heaven knows usury is everywhere now, on every billboard and every time there's a commercial break on the TV. It was a company offering loans to people so poor that the banks wouldn't lend to them. And the repayment rate, the APR, was 1,734%. My eyes nearly popped out of my head. They are forced to tell you that it's 1,734%.
Because it's happening. And the, but in this country, we've never had a cap on rent. We've never had a cap on interest. But if you go to Germany or France, you'll find, and indeed the Nordic countries, you'll find they do have a cap on interest. I'm very glad to say that there's been a major campaign running now for about 10 years, and the government has last taken the point. And there is going to be some kind of cap, but we don't know what the cap's going to be yet, on the what they call payday loans.
Yes.
Which is a loan where you run out of money by before the end of the week. You go and borrow some money and you have to pay it back with huge amounts of cash added to it when you get your pay. So there is a movement in this country to try and cap the interest. If I could just say one more thing. We've got coming the most enormous blitz on the very poorest, because not only will we have a housing benefit cap, but they're going to cap all the benefits at £500 total.
Yes.
And that's going to add to the problems of the poor by making it even more difficult for them to pay their
rent. Indeed it is. Indeed it is. God bless your work, Reverend Paul Nicholson.
Going to tax. If you may remember that back in the 1990s, we had something called the poll tax, where they took 20% of the local authority, the local taxes, out of unemployment benefits. Well, they're going to do that again, and that's going to cause a great deal of debt. It's going to cause a great deal of employment for bailiffs. I don't know quite how I should say that on this program, but I don't know if you know what bailiffs are. But they are the people who come round enforcing your debts and take your furniture.
Yes. I remember them well. The poll tax, I remember it well. I played a role in its defenestration and its abolition. Reverend Paul Nicholson, thank you very much indeed. I need to go to another call, though, also from London, from Mustafa, about the Israeli settlements. Mustafa, welcome to the show.
Hello, good afternoon, Joe. I'm just really, really glad to hear you, actually, you being on the TV there.
Thanks.
I'm really appreciate you to have you there. I hope what they call somebody brave like you, the other with my fellow, to support to stop the Israelis.
I'm doing my best. Go ahead, Mustafa. Thanks for that.
To do the right things. Mm. Because actually there is this Israel the way I do it now, because nobody says nothing about them. You know, they think they make low in, you know.
Well, the British government summoned the Israeli ambassador, as did five European Union countries. Of course, we didn't have cameras in the room, so I don't know. Maybe they brought out the sweets when he came in, or maybe they gave him a dressing down. Certainly none of them are proposing to take any sanctions against Israel, for it's blatantly and repeatedly and historically illegal settlement activity. Am I right?
Yes.
That's the problem. I mean, the Clinton criticized, she didn't condemn, she criticized this settlement announcement, even though it makes the United States around the world a lot of trouble. A strategic liability is what the former head of the American Armed Forces described his country's relationship with Israel. This liability is becoming heavier and heavier every time one of these blatantly illegal, contemptuous actions by Netanyahu are staged.
Because I would call the reason I'm saying that, because if you look through the actual history, the Israel, what happened to them, what they call when they were actually in German, they'll be attacked. So they're doing the same thing to the Palestine there.
Well, not quite the same thing. They're not gassing them in their millions, so we should be careful about that comparison. But definitely, the atrocities being visited by the settler state, which calls itself, though I don't accept the nomenclature, calls itself the Jewish state, is really very difficult to comprehend, given the recent history of Jewish people in the world. Abbas is in London. Wants to talk about Egypt. Abbas, go ahead, please.
Hi,
welcome to the show.
I would like to hear your comments regarding the situation nowadays in Egypt.
Yeah.
As we know that before 2 years, the revolution started there, and a lot of people came down to the street calling to fall down the regime and head of that regime, dictatorship Hosni Mubarak. As we know that the people came at that time. Nowadays, they came opposite to each other. That some fans to the president Mohamed Morsi and the other fans is opposite to them. Yes, I would like to know the nature of such of this revolution. Just after 2 years, these two fans come against each other. I don't know. Just I would like to hear your comments about it. Are there any external interference from the others?
Definitely. There are a lot of external actors, Abbas. Qatar is supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. Saudi Arabia is supporting the Salafists and giving money to others who are opposed to the Muslim Brotherhood. Saudi Arabia has more than one horse in this race. Some of the opposition are clearly allies of Western colonial countries. People like Amr Moussa and Mohammed al-Baradei are clearly backed by Western interests. There are remnants of the old Mubarak dictatorship everywhere, in the army, in the intelligence, in the police, in the media, in diplomatic service, and so on. It could hardly be otherwise. The dictatorship lasted so long. What I'm concerned about is that Egypt does not end like Syria, plunged by others into a civil war and weakened for the benefit of others, weakened permanently perhaps for the benefit of others. I have no doubt that Israel would be very happy indeed if both Syria and Egypt can be in flames. That's why it's vital that the real revolutionary elements in Egypt can make a negotiated agreement to chart a way forward. Mohamed Morsi won the presidency. He is the legitimate president of Egypt. Demands for his overthrow are illegitimate. He's only just been elected. Equally, he has to find a way of winning allies so that he can govern. You cannot rebuild a country like Egypt on the basis of one-party rule. And he seems singularly to have failed. And I call for a presidential council involving the defeated presidential candidates and the president, of course, being primus inter pares, first amongst equal. That seems to me the way to stabilize this current situation, which is pregnant with really disastrous consequences. Let's take an email on the comment wall. This one is from Mohammed in Cameroon. The Palestinians should pressurize President Morsi to pressurize Israel to respect the peace deal and the opening of all the borders. Well, I'm sure that President Morsi is rather busy right now. Now, I can't squeeze in a call before the news, so if Abid in London will stay on the line, I'll take him right afterwards. We're talking about the illegal Israeli settlements announced in the week as a slap in the face, a spit in the eye of the very Western countries that backed Israel in the United Nations last week. A studied insult from Benjamin Netanyahu. We're talking about the crisis in Egypt, where a revolution which 2 years ago overthrew the dictatorship looks like imploding. with former revolutionary comrades killing each other on the streets of Cairo. And we're talking about the economic blizzard blowing here, I can assure you, on the streets of England. I'll be back, God willing, after the news in just a couple of minutes' time. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. What's happening in Egypt? Revolution or counter-revolution? And what's the world going to do about the studied Israeli insult of the announcement of a new settlement program that will effectively separate forever the West Bank from Holy Jerusalem and end, surely, any prospect of the mirage they call the two-state solution ever becoming a reality, and the economic blizzard blowing through the streets of Britain with millions unemployed, millions in poverty, and child poverty figures and statistics going through the roof. All of that is coming up in the next half hour or so. Abdi's on the line in London, but he wants to talk about Israeli settlements. Abdi, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mr. Galloway.
Welcome. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I just want to talk to about settlement, and it seems like the Americans are not doing enough to protect human rights when they claim that they are democracy and all that. So I was just worried about them spending money on settlement, you know.
Well, Israel exists on American money. It could not exist other than with American money. The United States government and private Zionist philanthropy in the United States gives a total of $7 billion every year to Israel. And that's in addition to military aid that they receive right off the production line of the biggest military industrial complex companies in the United States, sometimes even before the U.S. military itself gets its hands on it. So Israel floats on a sea of dollars, and therefore no criticism by the United States is meaningful unless it contains the threat to withdraw some or ultimately all of that financial support, not to mention the veto in the United Nations, which protects Israel from virtually all criticism. Thanks, though, Abdi, for the call. Abdul is also in London, but he wants to talk about the UK budget and the economic situation. Abdul, go ahead, sir.
Hi, George. I just first of all want to say I've got Press TV now. I'm watching it on Hotbed.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I just want to say Press TV, they should tell people to get Press TV. I mean, basically, they should tell people where to get Press TV from.
Well, we do. It's on our website. If you go to our website, presstv.ir, and there's a whole plethora of information telling you how you can get it, which satellites, the directions to point the dish in, and all of that. But thanks. And it's very good you're watching us on TV. Makes a big difference, yeah?
I know what you mean, but I'm basically saying where the shops are. They should say where the shops are and who's supplying them and whatnot.
Okay, anyway, well, they'll have heard what you said, yeah.
And I just want your comment on George Osborne, robbing the working class, the people who are struggling today, to give it to the wealthy.
Yeah.
He's giving them tax break, yet he wants to rob the working class and the poor.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know what you...
Well, I did say at the beginning that after all this austerity, after all these savage cuts, most of which, by the way, aren't yet being implemented, after all this pain, pay freeze, poverty, mass unemployment, tripling of the tuition fees for students and so on, after all that, the budget is, the deficit is bigger today than it was before the Condemn Coalition began this savage austerity. The austerity is going to go on for longer and going to be even more painful than the Tories promised in the first place. The reality is, the deficit is growing because there is no growth in the economy. There is no increase in tax yield, partly because rich people are avoiding or evading it, but partly also because there is no economic activity that would generate tax revenue. There's millions are unemployed. What's needed is not more cuts, but more government investment. They are printing non-existent money in their so-called quantitative easing, but instead of giving it to the poor to go out and spend in the local shops, instead of giving it to the old age pensioners who spend virtually all of their pension on the local economy, they're giving it to the banks. And the banks are sitting on it, building up their balances and lending almost none of it. It is the economics of the madhouse. And unfortunately, stammer or no stammer, the new Labour front bench, Ed Balls, very well named, are simply not articulating a clear alternative strategy. That would take somebody like me on the front bench. And we're a bit away from that. Thanks, Abdul, for the chance to say that. Nisar is in the UK. He wants to talk about Israeli settlements. Nisar, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, George. Peace be with you.
Peace be with you. Go ahead.
Yeah, basically what I want to say was, you know, the moment you mention anyone mentioning the word Iran, especially among Muslim societies, you know, I find it's a very lukewarm thank you. Like, you know, the results of this Israeli attack, Zionist attack on Gaza 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago. You know, talking to even many organizations here in London, you know, you mention Iran, or they don't want to say, though I must say, Ismail Haniyeh, of course, he personally thanked.
He was very clear in his, he was very clear in his gratitude.
He was very clear. I mean, you know, this mainstream Muslims, I don't want to go into sect and all this stuff. They must wake up. You need to join hands. Need to join hands and make this 2 million Muslims here in the UK be an example to the rest of the 2 billion world over. And that can only come if they can simply give up this their, what do you call,
rise above this this foolish sectarianism that the enemies of all the Muslims wish them to continue to fall into the trap of.
Exactly. And what happens, the Zionists and, of course, the imperialists will take advantage of all this.
Yeah.
As you said.
Hallelujah. Yeah. Nisar, a wonderful call. I couldn't better it. And I endorse everything you said. Ameen. Next is an email on the comment wall. Let's take another one. We want your point of view. We want your country up here on the comment wall. Last one was from Cameroon. And this is Talas from Unknown. The best solution to Israeli settlements is for the Hamas and Islamic Jihad to direct their rockets towards the settlements, whether there are people are under construction, and that will discourage people from moving in. Well, of course, these rockets can't be directed anywhere. Although the Palestinian resistance does appear, finally, to have begun to get technology which can be a meaningful deterrent to Israeli aggression. And they got that from Iran. That's why Ismail Haniyeh thanked Iran most fulsomely. It's a pity that not everyone of the Muslim Ummah can see things as clearly as he was able to see them. Aradi is in Nigeria. He wants to talk about Israeli settlements too. Aradi, welcome to the show.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. George.
Go ahead, sir.
I want to talk about, thank you very much. I'm calling from Nigeria.
Yeah.
Mr. George.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. I would like to talk about Americans, why they are so interfering about all these chemical weapons and challenges from all these kind of, as in, they are so challenging on all these Arab countries. Well, after all the investigation, they will find nothing on it. So I don't know why they are doing such things like that.
Well, I'll tell you exactly, Aradi. They count on the people in Western countries being so infantilized that they cannot remember what the arguments were to stampede them into the war on Iraq. They count on the fact that more than 10 years, or nearly 10 years rather, have passed, and that in those 10 years, a lot of people have grown up and a lot of older people have forgotten that chemical weapons and other weapons of mass destruction were exactly the hoax that marched the world to that disastrous war, which killed a million people and scattered many millions to the corners of the earth. They hope that they can fool everyone all over again. The absolute, blatant, brazen lie that the Syrian government was about to fire chemical weapons at its, quote, own people, exactly the phrase they used to use about Iraq, is just that. It is a baseless, blatant lie. But it could be a ruse, a pretext, on which they launch themselves an aggression against the people of Syria. But as the Syrian government announced today, any foreign attack on Syria will have catastrophic consequences. And I think they mean what they say. Rihanna is in South Africa, wants to talk about Israeli settlements. Rihanna, most welcome. What would you like to say?
Salaam alaikum, George.
Alaikum salam. Go ahead, please.
It's a miracle that I got through to you, and thank you for listening to me. George, what I want to talk about is the settlements. I think, for me, I'm an old woman, but I've been an activist, and I've been part of the struggle in South Africa all my life. I know that the struggle that we went through against apartheid is nothing in comparison to what the people in Palestine are going through. My concern, and I'd like your comment on this, George, is these settlements, these settlers. They come from other countries all over Europe or wherever they come from. Whichever countries they come from, do they still hold those nationalities? And are those countries not complicit?
Well, it's a very good question. Most of them don't, as a matter of fact, hold any other nationality other than Israeli. But some of them do. And many of the people who were doing the killing in Gaza just a week or two ago, and who did an even greater amount of killing in 2008-2009, were in fact citizens of the United Kingdom and other countries who went to Israel, served in the so-called Israel Defense Force, which is neither entirely Israeli and certainly not a defense force, and then returned to their jobs and their homes in other countries. Now, if any Muslim in Britain or in South Africa had flown to Gaza and fought with the Palestinian resistance there, and then flown back to their own country, they would all have been arrested at the airport and they'd all now be in prison. So one of my campaigns in the British Parliament right at this minute is to make it illegal for citizens of this country to serve in the military in other countries, as well as continuing to be citizens here. But the reality is that there are many, you see, you come from South Africa and were a struggler against the settler state that existed there until the very recent past when apartheid was finally overthrown. Israel is exactly the same as South Africa. It is a settlement state where European settlers came to a territory that they actually had the physical wherewithal to occupy. And because they were backed by the imperial powers at the time, Britain, they were able to kick out the Palestinians. And so they did. The South African and Israeli comparison has been made by Archbishop Tutu, by President Mandela, by many scholars. Indeed, the Israeli scholar, Professor Ilan Pappe, called his book Apartheid in Israel, Israel an Apartheid State. So the comparison is exact. I say exact. And the solution is the same. When Mandela was asked by the Boers, the European settlers that once ruled the roost in your country, if they could have a little piece of it as a white state, Mandela answered, "We don't believe in white states or black states. We just believe in democratic states where every person, black and white, will be the equal, one of the other." That's the solution in what's called Israel-Palestine also. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Rihanna, an honor, in fact. Ibrahim is in Iran, wants to talk about Egypt. Ibrahim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, George. Hi.
Go ahead, sir.
Good to see you. Good evening for you and good night for us.
Thank you.
And I'm pleased to speak with you. George, thanks. I think the people in Egypt should be united right now. And I'm sure all things we see in the Egypt, this is from the United States. And if we focus on Clinton's speech before the demonstration in Egypt, we found the ball who the responsible of all the things we have see in the Egypt. And another point, maybe you disagree with me, but I think Morsi has dictatorial mind, and what we see in the street in Egyptian, some fine for him. After he sent his ambassador to Israel, we were wait for these days. But we hope it finished as soon as possible, because this is not good for the Egypt and not benefit for them. Thank you.
Well, I agree with that. And I did say earlier that there's no doubt that the Muslim Brotherhood has made many mistakes in Egypt. But Morsi is the democratically elected president. He's only just been elected. He has the right to act and rule as the president. But if he has any political sense, he'll realize that the American support that he thought he could count on is not worth anything at all. If the Americans think that they can kick out the Muslim Brotherhood from Egypt and reinstall people closer to their point of view, people close to the old dictatorship, people like Amr Moussa, long a voice for Western interests in Egypt, they will do so. They were ready to tolerate President Morsi. They hoped that they could hold him by the beard and lead him in the direction they wanted to go. But they would just as soon strangle him. And maybe they're trying to strangle him now. I don't support the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. I was campaigning in the Egyptian presidential election for other candidates, Abul Futuh and my old friend Hamdine Sabahi. But I say this to you, if Egypt slumps into civil war like we have in Syria, it will be absolutely disastrous for the Arabs, for the Egyptians, and for the Muslims. We need national unity in Egypt, a national unity which rejects Israel and rejects American hegemony in the region. That's the coalition that needs to be made. Hamdine Sabahi and Morsi, Abu Futuh and Morsi should be together around a cabinet table. With, yes, the president in charge, of course, like the prime minister here, is first among equals. Of course, Morsi will have to be first among equals in Egypt. But if we continue down this polarization, the only gainers will be the enemies of Egypt, of the Arabs and the Muslims. Trust me on that. Badaru is in Nigeria. Wants to talk about the same subject. Badaru, welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam. Go ahead.
Mr. Galloway, thank you very much for this wonderful program.
You're welcome.
Really, I cherish the way you are taking up this program.
Thank you.
And actually, the issue of Egypt and some of the parties in conflict, I think it is very important for them to sit down and realize that this Western world is just fooling them. Number two, the issue of Israeli settlement.
Yeah.
I know it's something that has to be understood by the Arabs in general, not only the Palestinians alone, including Muslims in the world. They should understand this issue of conflict is there already in most of the hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. It has also been narrated by some of the Western scholars ever since. So they should understand this and come back to reality. They should sit down and get themselves together, all the Arab world.
Well, I mean to that, Badaru, and thanks a lot for that call. I'm only moving on because I want to squeeze at least one more in before the end. Kazemi is in London, wants to talk about Egypt and Israel. Kazemi, welcome to the show. Go ahead quickly.
Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam. Go ahead, please.
About Egypt, I think the bone of contention seems to be the draft constitution, which says the final constitution will be drafted on the basis of Islamic principles. And Egypt, the whole of Egypt, Egyptian people are not Muslim Brotherhood. And I think...
No, but the vast majority of them are Muslims.
Yeah,
there's an important Christian minority.
But Salafi and other people, they are quite different people. And then you have got Christian there.
But the Sharia is the Sharia. It's laid out in the Quran. It's nothing to do with Salafi or Sunni or Shi'i or whatever.
I understand that. But let's say...
I think a Muslim Brotherhood government, a Muslim Brotherhood president, has the right to say that the constitution of Egypt should be based on Islamic principles. What's wrong with that? Egypt has the right to be an overwhelmingly Muslim country.
Well, it's okay, in principle, it's okay. But this is being exploited by America and exploited by other people. They are fueling a controversy and fueling probably the civil war. I think Mr. Morsi, he has done quite a good job, and he should, I think, say that the Constitution will be drafted on the principles of, on the democratic principles, subject to moral and religious values.
I can understand what you're feeling towards, but I say this to everybody watching. You can't say that Iran has the right to be the Islamic Republic of Iran, but Egypt doesn't have the right to have a constitution which draws its legitimacy from the Sharia. Egypt has that right. The vast majority of people in Egypt are Muslim people. They may vote in different ways, but they are Muslims. And Egypt has the right, and voted for, by the way, Islamic parties in overwhelming number in the parliamentary elections, and elected an Islamist president. He's not my cup of tea. I wouldn't have voted for him, except in the final choice between him and the Falul Shafiq, the remnant of the Mubarak dictatorship. It's not my choice, but beware in confusing the form of revolution with the content of revolution. Because if the content is counter-revolution, it doesn't matter how much it looks like a revolution, the result will be bad. Unity in Egypt behind these basic principles is the way forward, in my opinion. I don't know if I still have a voice which can carry into Egypt. But if I do, I call on my friends there and everybody there to end this disastrous confrontation and to try and find a way forward. I say that to President Morsi, and I say it to his opponents. Until we see you again, God willing.
Hello, just comment your name and the phone number, and just make sure your volume is set to 0.
0, 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You need to put through this phone number, and then we'll...